Om Namah Shivaya. Dear listeners of Shaivam.org, the next program is Spiritual Discourse. In this, you are about to listen Kawai Hindu Lectures. The titles are Analyzing from Fourth Dimension Control of Speech, presented by Sri Shivaya Bodhiyada Velayada Swami. Thank you. Om Namah Shivaya.
In the world of Shum, February gives us a new Mamsani. Shum Kanif U Makaif. These four concepts comprise this important Mamsani. The meditation this month should make us feel content and complete within ourselves, open and alive, basking in the knowledge that we have an inner language that names our dearest, closest feelings and thoughts and interrelated concepts, which no other language on the earth can adequately convey. This is why Kanif is sometimes known as a religion by those who have no religion until they convert or adopt to Saivism for an even greater fulfillment, balancing out the Makaif perspective of the inner path. Inner areas of the mind seem to be frail to external consciousness when they cannot be named or identified. Just suppose we had no word for the emotion we have named by the word fear. We could not convey what we were feeling, nor release ourselves from that feeling by speaking with others about it. It would be difficult for someone to console us if we had no word to identify the emotion called fear. And so it is with all other words in our vocabulary. They are but tools in the many different languages which identify states of mind, emotion, and physical objects. Our meditation, Shum Kanif U Makaif, tells us that we now have a path to follow, which no words on earth can describe except those given by Lord Shiva to help us on the path to his holy feet. So thinking about that, I chose a word. Yiliming Shum'un, which is the word for the seventh dimension. Word of his definition, dimension, seventh, superconscious mind. Clear, endless inner space. Not clear white light, just clear space. Above the vibratory rate of light and with no thing to be aware of, awareness becomes conscious of itself. Awareness can expand into the endless inner space of this dimension or contract into being completely aware of itself, Kaif. This dimension relates to the Kamshumalinga, Kamakadi Isara. To experience the collages within this dimension, look at the inner world through the top of the head. So the item there that struck me the most was awareness can expand into the endless inner space of this dimension or contract into being completely aware of itself. Kaif. So that's a nice image that can relate the two concepts to the seventh dimension. Kaif, awareness has contracted and isn't aware of anything except itself, then it can also expand and stay in the same dimension into endless inner space. So both experiences are there in the seventh dimension, and that idea of contraction shows how they relate. I thought I'd read more about the seventh dimension. The seventh dimension is clear inner space, not clear white light, just clear space. It goes on and on infinitely, like an infinite inner sky. Entering the seventh dimension, we enter realms of knowledge resulting from superconscious perception of the superconscious itself. The seventh dimension does not look back into the fifth dimension at all. It does look into the sixth and deeper into the eighth, ninth, tenth, 11th, and 12th dimensions, which exists in a completely different realm, a different universe, so to speak. The seventh dimension is a silent world. would be the heaven world of the gods themselves, their retreat place. And all of this takes place within you, within the wonderful mind of man, your mind. Between the fifth, sixth, and seventh dimensions, the lines we draw are understandably hypothetical. We give them boundaries and brackets in order to understand them, to define and identify these realms. The dividing lines between the first, second, third, and fourth are clear and distinct. But in the deeper realms, we know that they run together and merge, each existing as it does inside the other. This is intellectually intriguing, but the experience is much different. And that is what is sought, the direct personal experience. The experience of Kaif is simple. Our concepts about it are the biggest barrier. We often feel that pure consciousness must be earned by a saintly life, and we know our life well enough to disqualify ourselves. But that is the I am out here and heaven is in there concept. A false concept, if ever there was one. Turn it inside out. Realize and then convince the subconscious mind that you are the whole thing right now, the within as well as the without. The saint you envision living the perfect life lives in your own consciousness. All dimensions of existence reside in you, and you will never be more or less than you are at this moment. That makes attaining pure consciousness simple, doesn't it? And it is simple if we discard the baggage of accumulated opinions and misunderstandings. Anyone can experience Kaif, awareness aware of itself, for brief interludes. It is much more difficult to sustain the intensity, however, for the very power that allows us to control the mind enough to touch into Kaif stimulates the other dimensions as well, setting a wave rippling through stillest consciousness. That wave travels through the sixth, then the fifth, fourth, and third dimensions right out into the second. And if there are areas of the mind, especially in the second and third dimensions, which are not under guidance of the will, or which are unresolved, then that ripple will catalyze them and pull awareness out of Kaif. That is why very few aspirants are able to just sit in the absolute simplicity of Kaif. They are externalized by the outer dimensions as the intensity of pure awareness radiates and reverberates through the nerve system. Therefore, although Kaif is itself easy to attain, it is indeed difficult to sustain for longer periods and even more difficult to dissolve into Im Kaif, self-realization. The aspirant, noting this, then dedicates himself to refining the outer manifestations of the second, third, and fourth dimensions in order to gain a stable control over those forces so that when he does return to Kaif, the ripple that goes out into the mind does not cause a backlash, stimulation sufficient to pull awareness out to the third dimension. And you have all experienced this. You have been absorbed in a meditation only to be drawn out into a vision or into your legs, which were hurting, or into some thought sequences in the mind. Therefore, the realms of self-realization protect themselves from entrance simply by the nature of the mechanism of the dimensions. When one is consciously in the fourth dimension, he sees a slight moon-like glow within the head, just a faint glow. When he is in the fifth dimensional consciousness, he comes into a brilliant inner light within the head, bright and clear. However, when he evolves into the sixth dimension, that light glows in every cell of the body, through the torso, the hands, legs, and feet. Then in the seventh dimension, he comes into pure inner space, seeing within himself a vast space that goes on and on and on. At that time, he is not necessarily conscious of light at all, for light exists as the interaction of pure force with magnetic force. Thus space itself, even intergalactic space in the second dimension, is dark. But our atmosphere is light due to the reflecting resistance of friction that offers light energy. Similarly, one deeply immersed in the seventh dimension would be aware of being aware without any awareness of light. In a sense, he would be above the vibratory rate of light, and with no thing to be aware of, awareness becomes conscious of itself. That's probably enough to challenge us. Keeps going, but So that is similar to the meditation the monks are doing, the one on light. When one is consciously in the fourth dimension, he sees a slight moonlight glow within the head, just a faint glow. So that's Balikana. When he is in fifth dimensional consciousness, he comes into a brilliant inner light within the head, bright and clear. That's Ifche. However, when he evolves into the sixth dimension, that light glows in every cell of the body, through the torso, the hands, legs, and feet. That's Isim Nadanadi. So it's nicely explained there. Then in the seventh dimension, he comes into pure inner space. So it goes beyond light. That's the Sim Nadanadi Uim Kaif. So going beyond light. Then light is like the launching platform of awareness into going beyond light. So Isim Nadanadi is a stepping off point to go beyond light into pure inner space and dissolution of awareness. That's the idea. Gurudev's explanation of light is very helpful when we think of it as a friction. It's like two rocks together, you get a spark. Light is caused by a friction of two objects. If you only have one object, you don't have light. Something has caused a friction to create light. So in this case, the friction is actinic and odic force. Their friction between them causes the light. Actinic or pure energy, when blended together with odic magnetic energy, creates form in a similar way that the combination of air, which is invisible, with smoke creates various forms or clouds in the sky. So if you're just in actinic energy, there's no light. You have to be closer to odic energy. So the actinic and the odic are both there, and then you have light. Then the other useful point is what pulls us out of Kaif is unresolved issues, either long-term ones or temporary ones, items in the mind which are unsettled. That's what Gurudev is saying. We get into Kaif, and then the intensity of what puts us into Kaif stimulates things, and if if we have unresolved issues in the subconscious mind, in the conscious mind, then we'll end up in those. They kind of come right out into that. So it shows the importance of resolving things, both long-term things, through the practice of Mahavasanadala Tantra and forgiveness and penance and so forth, as well as keeping our current life from building up unresolved issues as well. By calming ourselves down and resolving differences and avoiding arguments and so forth. Otherwise, when we get into Kaif, we can't sustain it. As Gurudev says, the aspirant noting this then dedicates himself to refining the outer manifestations of the second, third, and fourth dimensions in order to gain a stable control over those forces, so that when he does return to Kaif, the ripple that goes out into the mind does not cause a backlash stimulation sufficient to pull awareness out to the third dimension. Okay, that's the world of Shun for February. From Merging with Shiva, a recent lesson. Of course, our most cherished theology is monistic Saiva Siddhanta. The Advaitic teachings inherited from our Guru Parampara, who outlined the course we are on. This teaches us that God and man are ultimately one. This teaches us that our Supreme God, Shiva, is the creator of the universe, and he is also the creation. He is not different from it. We must go to the temple and worship with all our heart, God in form, before our karmas are cleared, our responsibilities paid, and we realize the formless perfection of God Shiva. The guha, the cave of consciousness, opens its doors for us to sit comfortably, mentally undistracted, within the cavity within the head, there to begin the yoga of union for personal, spiritual, everlasting attainment. Saivasiddhanta outlines the path that we are on. It tells us how to attain these goals. It is said in our Hindu scriptures that it is necessary to have a Satguru. However, it is possible for an individual to accomplish all of this by himself without a guru. Possible, but most difficult, and exceedingly rare. There may be 4 or 5 in 100 years or less. Scriptures explain that perhaps in past lives such a soul would have been well disciplined by some guru and was helped inwardly by God in this life. With rare exceptions, a guru is necessary to guide the aspirant on the path as far as he is willing and able to go in his current incarnation. Few will reach the ultimate. The Satguru is needed because the mind is cunning and the ego is a self-perpetuating mechanism. It is unable and unwilling to transcend itself by itself. Therefore, one needs the guidance of another who has gone through the same process, who has faithfully followed the path to its natural end, and therefore can gently lead us to God within ourselves. Remember, the Satguru will keep you on the path, but you have to walk the path yourself. It's the guru's job to inspire, to assist, to guide, and sometimes even impel the disciple to move a little farther toward the self of himself than he has been able to go by himself. One of the tools Gurudev has given us is the concepts of the Shum language. It's looking up, and there it is up in the banners there. One of the concepts is the idea that the mind has 7 dimensions. And specifically, the idea I pulled out this morning is how we can improve our experiences in the 3rd dimension by utilizing the 4th. In other words, the 3rd dimension is our emotional reactions, our emotional ties to other people. And that's a challenging area to keep smooth because we run into difficulties in life. Everything's going along fine and then something changes in life and our relationships to others change and all of a sudden we have a tension or more of a tendency to argue than we had. Something changed in the circumstances in life and made it more challenging. So that's always happening to us. But one of the problems is if we don't have a clear overview of it. So that's what Gurudev is explaining here. An outer dimensional perspective, looking from the outside into the mind and trying to understand it, only results in partial concepts. We are unable to grasp the whole from such a vantage point. Similarly, we can learn about a city by traveling around the streets of that city and talking with selected residents. Generally, we learn one section of the city better and neglect others. Only by climbing to the peak of a nearby mountain can we study and comprehend the entire pattern of the city below. That overall vision or mountaintop consciousness is what the 4th dimension provides. Once that all-encompassing view is gained, we can enter any section of the city with confidence. So that's the idea. If we can utilize this chakra, the 4th chakra, we can look down upon what's going on in our emotional nature, our interactions with people, our actions, reactions, and see the whole pattern. If we only see part of the pattern, it's hard to adjust it. We know something's not right, but we don't have the overview of it. If we can look down upon it clearly, then we see the pattern. And usually we're stuck in something. We don't want it to work out this way, but say husband and wife, I have a pattern of talking things over and talking them over and a little more sided, and they get into an argument. It's just a pattern they have. And they don't want to do it, but they don't know how to stop. So to figure out how to stop, you need the overview. Then you have the possibility of having insights into the pattern to see what makes it polarize, what makes two positions be taken instead of one position developed into, you know, in a free-flowing way. When we get into an argument, a one position has become two rigid positions, and neither one is willing to budge. So if we can have an insight into what to do to prevent polarizing, what is it that causes that to happen, then we can work on not having that happen as much. It's unrealistic to think we can change something that's happening regularly so that it never happens, but at least we can reduce it. There was a quote from Gurudeva on Taka in the last few days that struck me. It says, "Remember, your powers of observation are cultivated by abstinence from excessive talk. That is all you have to do to begin with. Be more silent and observing, not wasting or dissipating this most vital power." This relates to what we were talking about last phase, the fourth dimension of the mind, which is accessed through the fourth chakra, which gives you an overview of your normal thoughts and emotions. Instead of seeing them one at a time, you're seeing them all at once. You have the overview of your processes and can have insights into your mental and emotional patterns, as well as your emotional relations with other people. They become more clear when you look at them from the fourth dimension. That's what we were saying last phase. The key that Gurudeva gave last phase for experiencing the fourth dimension was to feel the energy in the spine, the spiritual energy in the spine. When you center yourself in that, then you're in the fourth dimension. This is another key, which is abstinence from excessive talk. There's a related statement by Gurudeva, which is, "Think before you speak, and speak only that which is true, kind, helpful, and necessary." Remember that one? Question sometimes comes up, what is necessary? From one point of view, no talk is necessary. You could write notes all day or something. Necessary means that which is expected in a socially expected by the situation. That's what necessary means. If you were to speak less than that, you would stand out as being unusual, different. So different kinds of social situations require a different amount of talk. If you're going to a certain kind of party, you're supposed to talk a lot. If you're at work, you're not supposed to talk a lot with the other people working. It would be considered a distraction in many places of work. Thus, what becomes necessary, true, kind, helpful, and necessary, is defined in that way. This is also pointing out that silence is more than the environment. We have many individuals come here and say, "Oh, what a peaceful place. It's so peaceful. I feel so peaceful here. Just hear nature. I hear all the birds," and so forth. And they're uplifted because of that. But they're also quieting their thoughts by by being here. In other words, this isn't their normal environment. It's easier to quiet down your everyday thoughts when you're somewhere different than your normal environment. When you're in your normal environment, it catalyzes you to think about your normal responsibilities, catalyzes you to try and solve the ongoing problems you've been thinking about. Why? Because you're in a normal environment. So therefore, even though this is a very peaceful place, we have to have the mind quiet in order to enjoy that peace. And to have the mind quiet, it's helpful to practice abstinence from excessive talk. There's an important lesson in merging with Shiva recently, form and formlessness. It's a little deep, but it's an important point, worth being clear on. We must caution each and all not to think of the external mind as God, which would be a self-deception. Man's personality or individuality is not God, neither is the ego, the intellect, or the emotions. Though the unenlightened sometimes make this mistake, I believe you will readily ferret out the difference. Parashiva, the self-God, lies resident at the core of man's existence, far beyond the reach of the external phases of consciousness. Yet these exist only because that exists, the timeless, causeless, spaceless God Shiva beyond the mind. The other perfection inherent in the soul of man is Satchitananda, being, consciousness, and bliss. When mind force, thought force, and the vrittis, or waves of the mind, are quiescent, the outer mind subdues and the mind of the soul shines forth. We share the mind of God Shiva at this superconscious depth of our being. In entering this quiescence, one first encounters a clear white light within the body, but only after sufficient mastery of the mind has been attained through the disciplined and protracted practices of yoga. Hearing the veena, the mridangam, the tambura, and all the psychic sounds is the awakening of the inner body, which, if sadhana is pursued, will finally grow and stabilize, opening the mind to the constant state of Satchitananda, where the holy inner mind of God Shiva and our soul are one. I hold that Satchitananda, the light and consciousness ever permeating form, God in all things and everywhere, is form, though refined form, to be sure. Satchitananda is pure form, pure consciousness, pure blessedness or bliss, our soul's perfection in form. Parashiva is formless, timeless, causeless, spaceless, as the perfection of our soul beyond form. Though it is supreme consciousness, Satchitananda is not the ultimate realization, which lies beyond consciousness or mind. This differs from popular interpretations of present-day Vedanta, which makes these two perfections virtually synonymous. Modern Vedanta scholars occasionally describe Satchitananda almost as a state of the intellect, as though the perfected intellect, through knowledge, could attain such depths, as though these depths were but a philosophical premise or collection of beliefs and insights. This is what I call simplistic Vedanta. To understand how these two perfections differ, visualize a vast sheath of light which permeates the walls of this monastery and the countryside around us, seeping in and through all particles of matter. The light could well be called formless, penetrating as it does all conceivable forms, never static, always changing. Actually, it is amorphous, not formless. Taking this one step farther, suppose there were something so great, so intense in vibration that it could swallow up light as well as the forms it permeates. This cannot be described, but can be called Parashiva, the greatest of all of God Shiva's perfections to be realized. This too can be experienced by the yogi in Nirvikalpa Samadhi. Thus, we understand Parashiva as the perfection known in Nirvikalpa Samadhi, and Satchit Ananda as the perfection experienced in Salvikalpa Samadhi. By the word formless, I do not describe that which can take any form or that which is of no definite shape and size. I mean without form altogether, beyond form, beyond the mind, which conceives of form and space, for mind and consciousness too are form. Gurudev is trying to make it clear what's the difference between Parashiva and Satchit Ananda, and what exactly the word formless means to him. So sometimes the word formless is used to describe something that's amorphous, that has no distinct form. You can take water. Water is amorphous. It's flowing all over. It has no distinct form. You can freeze it and you can create something that has a distinct form. Air has no distinct form, but it could be frozen and have a distinct form. So amorphous means that which is of no particular form. But by formless, Gurudeva means it's stepping out of the whole process, the whole realm of time, form, and space. You're stepping out of it. Anything in the realm of time, form, and space, even that which is amorphous, you're stepping out of that and then coming back into that. So that's what Nirvikalpa Samadhi is. Entering a realm that's formless, timeless, spaceless, and causeless. Thus the emphasis of this is being clear on Satchit Ananda is amorphous. It has a, it's not beyond form. It permeates form, but that is an amorphous state. Whereas Parashiva transcends even that. Thank you very much. A wonderful face.